This has been Flanagan with AL.com in Tuscaloosa. I'm happy to bring you a conversation that I had with Sports Illustrated writer Richard Deitch. He's the media reporter. He often covers women's basketball for them. He has a weekly media report, the Media Circus, that you can find on SI.com. And he currently has a really good feature about Vern Lundquist, the CBS sports announcer that I know that basically every Alabama fan, football fan specifically, is all too familiar with Vern Lundquist. Everybody knows that this is his last year as CBS sports announcer when it comes to college football and calling SEC games on Saturdays. And Richard Deitch followed Vern the weekend of the Alabama-LSU game, and he wrote a great feature on sort of what Vern does and how that particular game went. Richard wrote about his experience in Baton Rouge, and I wanted to talk to Richard specifically about the experience in Baton Rouge, which was his first ever SEC football game to attend. He's a New Yorker, and he's never been to one down here in the Deep South, and he thought that this was the year to try it out, and he picked a great venue, obviously, in College Football City and really college football matchup between Alabama and LSU to try it for the first time, and I envy the fact that that was his first ever game to see as a spectator. It was a great game, and everybody knows who has ever been to Baton Rouge for a college football game or ever even watched it on television that it's a really special place to watch a game and to really experience college football, especially in the SEC. So I'm going to talk to Richard about that experience coming down from New York to Baton Rouge to see his first ever SEC college football game. And we talk a little bit about Vern Lundquist, and we talk about a few other couple of sports media questions that I had for him while I had him on the phone. So enjoy this conversation with Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch, and definitely check out not only his weekly media column on SI.com, but also check out his podcast, which is fantastic, the SI Media Podcast with Richard Deitch. You can find it on iTunes. Enjoy the conversation.
Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated, host of the excellent SI Media Podcast, which you can find on iTunes. You currently have a feature up on SI.com about Vern Lundquist, the CBS sports announcer, after following him around in Baton Rouge for the Alabama LSU football game last Saturday. It's a really good piece. People need to check it out. Richard, we often cover the fan experience on our site, AL.com, specifically from the perspective of Alabama and Auburn fans, both at home and on the road. I'm curious, for you, what did you expect going to Baton Rouge, or more broadly, going to an SEC football game in the Deep South, and what reality met those expectations?
Well, first, thanks for the invite. I appreciate that. That's a good question, because I'm not sure I expected anything, to be very honest, because I had no point or frame of reference as to what to expect. I had never been to an SEC game before. I had certainly been to Louisiana before, New Orleans, which is sort of its own little world. And I had been to some other states in the South, Georgia. So I have seen the football stadium there in another story, but never attended a Georgia game. So my interactions in SEC country, I've been to South Carolina. Like, they exist, but they exist in a very ephemeral way. So I honestly had no idea what to expect. And so when I first got to town, which would be the Thursday before the Saturday game, immediately what struck me was just how many LSU signage, like, I saw, whether it was people wearing shirts, whether it was just purple all over the place. But again, not so overwhelming. I lived in Ann Arbor, and, at least on that Thursday, Michigan certainly was as big, if not bigger, in terms of, like, identity than LSU was. Friday, started seeing more people coming into town, at least where the hotel I was at, far more LSU and Alabama fans. So that started to get interesting. I was like, oh, wow, this is really a big game. And, of course, I knew it was a big game, given that the Death Valley night game is always big. But that was my first key Friday afternoon, Friday night, like, oh, man, I might be onto something special. So this is my long way of sort of now setting up Saturday. Saturday, hotel was packed. People in the streets, all wearing their colors, had breakfast with Vern, or maybe actually had sort of lunch with Vern. And then on the way to the stadium is when things started striking me. Lines everywhere in terms of I think we left 4 hours prior to the game, and there was still traffic, and there were still people around. When I got to the stadium is when it hit me. I'd been to Tiger Stadium the day before. Incredible edifice. I mean, bigger than anything I expected. I've seen Texas. That's kind of what it reminded me of in terms of just like gigantic athletic facility in the middle of campus. But Saturday afternoon is when this thing hit me that I had entered a college environment that I had never experienced before. That started with the tailgating, which went on as far as the eye could see. I started seeing people line up for Tiger Walk, which was incredible. I mean, just waves and waves of purple all over the place as the players came to campus. I saw one of the two schools get a police escort onto campus, which the only thing I'd seen close to that is European soccer, where the soccer teams come in and they start throwing things at the bus. But that's professionalized and that's Europe. So that was pretty eye-opening. And then I think the thing that really sort of keyed off for me in terms of the first thing when I was like, wow, this is a pretty incredible experience, was just walking. We got invited because of Vern's connections to a tailgate that was fairly close to the stadium. It's like a college roommate of his who invited a group of us there while the CBS crew was doing stuff. And, you know, we got to hang out with all these old school LSU fans who could not have been nicer, giving us like more food and Cajun specialties, and got a chance to talk to them. And that's when I first sort of indicated for me, like, that's when you read about the passion of the SEC and the sort of the religious fervor of SEC football. And that was the moment for me where I could finally see it with my own eyes. And this is even before the game starts. 2 hours, 3 hours before the game starts in the LSU tailgating facility. So I'm happy to talk about the game with you, but that to me was when everything became a realization, when I was essentially in the middle of like LSU country outside of the stadium prior to the game.
Well, you stated earlier this season that you wanted to go to an SEC game this year, and you sort of polled your Twitter followers on which game you should go to. What prompted that decision? Had you planned to do the Vern piece all along and you just needed a game to do it, or had you planned the trip and you sort of the Vern piece sort of came with it, or you found that later?
No, I it's just like one of the few things in American sports in this country that I haven't seen. And that I always felt like I had lacked the education of why all these people were so into it. You know, I've been to the Olympics many times, been to Super Bowls, deep NBA finals, but I've been to enough NBA games where I sort of have that experience. Now I've been to Stanley Cup finals, Kentucky Derby. I've been, generally speaking, NASCAR, I did 6 races. So I've really, Sports Illustrated luckily afforded me the opportunity to see all sorts of very cool stuff. But this was something I never experienced. So when I put that out to my Twitter followers, and, you were helpful on this as well, they all basically had very similar suggestions. The top suggestion was Alabama-LSU. The second was Alabama-Auburn. The third was any Alabama experience. And then the fourth were like, go to Oxford so you can go to the Grove, and, you know, very specific probably to their teams. But Alabama essentially factored into almost every one of the suggestions in terms of the most suggestions. So when I used that data, I knew I was going to go to an Alabama game. The question was, did I want to do it like the night game experience at LSU, or did I want to do it in Tuscaloosa with one of Alabama's games? So a year in advance, I looked at the schedule, and I noticed that Alabama was at LSU the next year. I always had that in the back of my mind. And the Vern story was something I always wanted to do, and I just combined the two. I used the desire to go to an SEC game, knowing that I could get to that game through Vern as a vessel. So I pitched my bosses on the Vern story. They were very cool in saying, we don't really care what game you want to do it on, just, you know, give us a weekend that works. And then I was able to get the game I wanted, because then I looked at the CBS schedule in September, and it was either going to be the Iron Bowl or the night game at LSU. And then I think, if I remember correctly, is the Iron Bowl like Thanksgiving? I think that's the only reason I didn't go to that game. I think that the LSU game just turned out to be a better game for my family.
Yeah, it is Thanksgiving weekend, and
so there you go. That's it.
I think you made a wise choice. I've been to Baton Rouge for an Alabama LSU game one time, and it was in 2012, and it was just in the midst of just the thick of that newfound rivalry and Alabama's success, and it really does live up to the hype So yeah, good call. But I'm curious too. What is your consumption level of college football, and more specifically SEC football?
Well, I'd say in the last like couple of years, it's been far significant compared to the previous years. I generally speaking will catch the 3:30 game, at least parts of it, almost every weekend. I'm not watching the whole game. I'll be totally blunt on that, but I'm flipping around the channels and definitely checking out the game. Usually late in the fourth quarter of that main game. I watch the SEC Network occasionally on a Saturday just to sort of see what they're going on. There was a stretch where I was watching a lot of the SEC morning pregame because I think it's pretty good. And then I've now found myself just either flipping around or not watching as much Saturday morning. I watch, because I cover women's basketball, I've watched a lot of SEC women's basketball. So the SEC, I probably, as a New Yorker, I probably watch the SEC Network probably as much as anybody who's not an alum of one of these schools. In terms of other SEC football, I can't say I could tell you every week on that Saturday what the other games were and the results, like ASAP, outside of the CBS game. So, you know, I'm not dieharding it where, like, I can tell you everything Florida, Georgia, you know, Ole Miss did. But it's a conference I consume as much, at least for me, as any other college football conference I consume, probably along with the Big Ten, just because, again, I have Michigan ties, having lived in Ann Arbor once. So I'd say it's a moderate consumption, but this trip will probably lead me to consume it more because, you know, the last part of this sort of journey was prior to sitting in the booth with Vern for the game. I went down on a field about 70, 80 minutes before the game and had a credential that afforded me field access. So I just walked around and watched as the crowd came in, you know, watched the LSU band come in. I was on the field when both teams came on. I mean, that was unbelievably just interesting and cool because the sound at Tiger Stadium was so loud. One of the loudest crowds I've ever been to in terms of when LSU comes out sort of right before kickoff. That stadium is as loud as I've ever heard any kind of stadium in the state. But just being on that field, it gave me a great sense of if you're like an 18 or 17-year-old kid and, you know, you grew up in the South, you see, like, what's going on prior to one of these games. Now I totally understand why these kids want to go to school at Alabama or LSU or Ole Miss. You totally get it. Like, you get the excitement. And then in terms of the negative stuff, you also get the negative stuff that comes with that, how these coaches are all powerful in their towns, how no doubt cops look the other way when players sort of infractions, how so much of the school's economic base is set up because of football. So this was a really great trip for me just because it gave me far more of an education into the power of SEC football than I ever would have had if I had just been watching it here in New York.
Well, and Richard, I want to ask you about something that you brought up in your media column this past week about the shot of the girl that had viral potential for CBS where they chose not to show it. You said that they could have shown it, but they opted not to because it was basically just the right thing to do. I think some people might hear that and say, isn't it kind of like when Donald Trump said he could have said nasty things about Bill Clinton but didn't for one reason or another? How often does it happen where production has that kind of power to humiliate fans depending on what they capture from those who don't know they're being filmed? And when is something embarrassing ever worth sharing on national television like that?
That's a good quote. First of all, this could happen every game because these guys have cameras everywhere. They do in commercials check the crowd to see interesting things that are going on. Quite frankly, I'm sure over the years there have been male directors or male staffers who check the crowd to look for pretty women who are there. So the potential for this is every week at every venue. So that's the first part of your answer. CBS didn't know that I was going to write this. So I don't want you to think or any of your listeners to think somehow that, like, I was trying to I was doing CBS a favor or anything because they didn't know. I happened to just be aware of this. I saw the shot when I was in the booth. They had this woman, I'd say for a good 3 minutes in commercial or 2.5 minutes in commercial, just showing her either trashed out of her mind or sleeping during the middle of a 0-0 game. So it struck me that I was like, oh, man, like, they're going to go to this woman. This is going to go viral big. The people who were in the booth with me sort of noticed it. And then, unbeknownst to me, because I didn't have the headset that connected to the producer, clearly they killed it because they came back from break and they showed something totally different. So then I, at the end of the night when I saw the producer, double-checked my facts and say, you know, I saw this, and you made a decision not to do it. And he said something to the effect of, yeah, it was my call. I didn't think it was the right thing to do. He didn't go on some long speech, try to make himself a hero. He was just like, you know, you make these split-second decisions all the time, and this was one I made. There's no way he thought I was going to write it, because I heard from him, in fact, today, sort of saying, hey, I appreciate you mentioning that, but, you know, you probably almost made me look too good than you should have. So to sort of answer, I guess, your final question, where's the line? That's a good question. You know, the line, I think, is where any producer or director draws it, and then the line is where you as a viewer make a decision whether you think this is embarrassing or whether you think this is funny. In my opinion, and again, this is just my opinion, I think if you're under 30 and you see this kind of stuff, you love it. Dudes are going to share it with each other. They think it'll be hilarious that some girl was drunk at a game and sort of, you know, like you know, half sleeping in an LSU-Alabama game. I think if you're 45 or 50 and you have a daughter who's 18, you'd be mortified if that was your daughter. So you'd be like, thank God they didn't show that. So I think the line is probably where you are in your life and like the kind of stuff that you think should be on television or not. On a personal note, I think they made the right call. You know, as someone who writes about media and I think is, you know, fairly savvy when it comes to social media and things that spread virally, that would have been everywhere. And, yeah, some people who interacted with that girl, I assume she was an LSU student, would have thought it was funny. And then other people would have totally abused the hell out of her for months, and that would have sucked for her. So I'm glad they made that call. I thought that was, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, I thought they made the right call.
Well, and you probably know now how SEC football fans view Vern Lundquist and Gary Danielson in the booth and the job that they right. do. That those who speak out are typically not fond of the pair. Do you find that to be a pretty common dynamic between fan bases and commentators, or do you sense anything unique with Vern and Gary in the SEC?
Right. I find that many of those fans hail from your home state right now, Ben. I think it's the product of a number of things. The SEC football fan is a really hard grader, like a soccer viewer, probably among the hardest graders in sports television. And I think whether it was Vern and Gary, or if, let's say you put Nestler and Kirk Herbstreit there, they would get the same abuse. I am convinced of that. So I don't think it's necessarily even about the announcers. I think any announcer is going to get it, because I think the conference fans are so hardcore that I think they think that most of the broadcasters are against them. I think they hear the game the way they want to hear the game. I also, in a million years, am positive that Gary Danielson and Vern Lundquist are not favoring any team. They are calling it neutral. When Vern Lundquist goes back to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and Gary Danielson either goes to his Michigan home or Florida home, they're not walking around with Nick Saban jerseys. I guarantee it. They have their own lives. These guys call the game for 3.5 hours, and they get out of Dodge. They are, in my opinion, neutral. That said, in terms of specific things to Gary and Vern, I think a lot of fans over the years got on Vern for making mistakes, which he did. I think he would cop to that. His eyesight is not as good as it used to be. He's not at 76. He's, you know, he's not as fast as he was at 50 or 45. I think he makes that up by being a great storyteller and having an incredible voice and an incredible sense of the moment. And in terms of Gary, you know, Gary's a pretty you know, he's a different kind of broadcaster. He's not the jovial, like, you know, John Madden, I want everybody to love me kind of guy. He's pretty sober in his analysis, and I would imagine that rubs SEC fans the wrong way. I think when he makes a mistake, they're all over him as well. I generally think they're a pretty good team. One thing I would say, Ben, and this would be really interesting to me, is I'll be fascinated to see how Brad Nestler gets it next year compared to Vern, because I would – you know, we could talk 1 year from today. If I had to bet and I was in Vegas, I'd bet pretty big money that Nestler will be criticized as much as Lundquist will next year. And those are two different voices and two different styles. I just think if you are the lead broadcaster of that package, criticism from certain SEC fans is coming with the deal.
Definitely. And quite honestly, I think when Vern's not there next year with Gary, I think it'll disappoint a lot of SEC fans, including Alabama and Auburn, because I think Vern and Gary are just kind of part of the SEC family at this point. So Well, we'll see what happens. But you recently tweeted that the Alabama-LSU game did better numbers than some Monday night football games this season. And some would probably argue that's because ESPN has broadcast some pretty crummy games this year. But it could also mean that SEC and college football continues to broaden its national viewership. Do you think that?
I do. I think certain SEC games, if they were in the Monday Night Football slot, would probably get on the low end of what Monday Night Football can get. You know, I'm talking Alabama, LSU. Let's say if Alabama is playing a an undefeated Florida or Texas A&M or something like that, the conference is absolutely growing in popularity. There's no question about that. CBS has been a big part of that with its package. ESPN has been a major part of that in terms of its sports talk. You know, guys like Feinbaum have now gone national. A lot of personalities from the SEC who have much more of a national footprint than they used to before. So it's far and away the most popular college football conference. I would say when Michigan, Ohio State are getting together, that expect rival SEC games. Ohio State's probably the best, along with Alabama, the best national television team. Notre Dame up there too, but traditionally if you look every week, Ohio State or Alabama are usually getting the best ratings. So, yeah, the footprint's grown. Would I call it a national league or national package? It's pretty close. You know, the one place where I don't really know this, but this is just more sort of a guess. It doesn't seem to me, or doesn't strike me, the SEC has any kind of real big footprint in the Pacific Northwest, and a mild one in the upper north of the country, like the Minnesotas, the Wisconsin, et cetera. But essentially, everywhere else, I think. I think they have their fans, and sort of talking in terms of viewership fans, certainly the Southeast, Southwest, I think there's enough fans on the East Coast, and I think there's some fans on the far West Coast in California and stuff. So, you know, for a college football conference, it's at least as national as Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. So it's grown, and I would imagine as long as the as long as the recruiting stays as it is, which I imagine it will be, as long as they have NFL-caliber players, as long as they have high-caliber coaches, I don't expect things to change. I expect it just to grow.
Well, and Richard, I have one more on Baton Rouge. What's the best thing you ate on game day?
I don't know if this is the best thing I ate, although it was pretty good. It was something called boudin balls, which I had never heard of before, which maybe you have. It's like rice and meat, like fried and almost in like a hush puppy kind of manner, and so the people at the LSU tailgate gave us that, and that was pretty tasty. I had a little bit of jambalaya, but I've had that before. I'm trying to think if there was anything else as specific to sort of LSU that I had. I think that was about it, but I can only say the hospitality of people at the tailgate was amazing. Maybe I wouldn't have gotten that if I had an Alabama shirt or something, but you know, I told them I was from New York, and I imagine I was like it was like E.T. I was such an alien creature that they were just fascinated by me walking around.
Did you feel like E.T.?
It's weird. You know, when you sort of parachute in to these places, like my colleague Tim Layden wrote a great piece about how sports writers sort of parachute into these places, and you think you know stuff, but you don't, and you're sort of like equating it to like every media prognosticator who predicted Hillary Clinton would win and Trump ends up winning. So, yeah, you always know you are an outsider, but sometimes you can use being an outsider to your advantage in that if you show that you're interested in people's life and what people are doing there, I think, at least I found, a lot people want to tell you about, like, what they do and what they like, because they don't often get a chance to do that. Most people in the United States do not talk to reporters ever. It just doesn't happen. I mean, Les Miles and Nick Saban do every week, but your average person doesn't. They're generally speaking, they watch news on TV or they read or whatever, but they don't really come across many reporters. So in that sense, I found that people were certainly in LSU just willing to talk and interesting. I had one conversation with this girl. She must have been 25 or so, and we were just sort of talking about our upbringing, and she grew up in Baton Rouge and went to LSU, and that was her dream. And I told her I spent most of my life in New York City. And we just laughed at how, like, different our entire upbringings were, how we were different politically and everything else. But yet, here we were in the middle of this field outside of Tiger Stadium. So that's cool. That's one of the great things about the job I have, is that you can have experiences like that.
A couple of quick off-topic questions for you, just because of your expertise. And this comes up after watching the World Series and the job that John Smoltz did. I know you were a fan of his work as a color commentator during that broadcast. How does the path to color commentary usually start? Do networks depend on retired players with interest in it to come to them, or do they actively search for former players who might fit that mold?
Both. Usually, like at a Smoltz level, you either in the last year of your career or as you retire, you are approached by an agency, a talent agency, who signs you, and then those talent agencies have relationships with the broadcast places. So John Smoltz, in his case, signed with an agency called CSE, and I guarantee the year he retired, CSE called ESPN, TBS, Fox, et cetera, to say, we represent John Smoltz. Would you be interested in talking to him? Would you be interested in having a tryout? That's how it works. And the bigger the name, obviously, the easier it is to get to a meeting. This is just, I'm making an example. If David Ortiz hires CAA and CAA calls every one of these networks that have baseball, David Ortiz will get an interview with every network. He may be terrible on television. It doesn't matter. You get a big name like that, you're going to get that interview. If you're a career journeyman type, a little tougher to sort of maybe predict that you'll get on a big network. So in that sense, maybe you go regional and stuff like that. But that's usually how it works, is these guys get an agent, and then the agent begins the process of connecting with the television networks.
Well, and I know that you just wrote about this, but you know, news always breaks at unexpected times. But what have you heard, or what do you think could be the next step for Bill Simmons?
I think he just retreats back into the ringer and writes a little bit more and focuses heavy on his podcast. I think they want to take that podcast network and make it more of a video network as well. I don't think he's done on television for good, although I can't tell you what his next step is, because I don't think he would know that. Probably he'll probably get a little involved in some documentary work, at least in terms of ideas. So if I had to guess, I think he steps back more into the day-to-day of the ringer. And let's say at least for 6 to 12 months, that's his primary gig, and I think you'll see him write more.
Well, and given he's a big NBA guy under the same umbrella, I mean, is it at all feasible that a role on Inside the NBA is on the table?
The only reason that – I mean, HBO is sort of one step removed from Turner. Is that possible? Yeah. It would be more possible to me if Bill Simmons was hired by Bleacher Report, if that makes sense. Because that's really under the Turner umbrella, and that's something I could see. But I could see a one-off, like I'm making this up, like either in March or, you know, let's say in March, you see Simmons on NBA TV or Inside the NBA for like a one-off on one night. Could see that for sure, but I don't see, at least in the near term, any regular role for him on any of Turner's broadcasts.
Definitely. Well, Richard Deitch, thank you so much for the time, sharing your experience in Baton Rouge. I'm glad you had a great time. I love your work. Keep it up, and thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for letting me talk about it. I haven't really had the chance to, so thanks for the invite, Beth.